Nana raso gha sarito. Vriksha asan madhu shrava. Akrishna pacho sadayo. Girayo bibran umanim. Nana. Various. Rasa. Liquids. Ogha. Flooding. Saritaha. The rivers. Riksha. The trees. Asan. Became. Madhu. With sweet sap. Shrava. Flowing. Akrishna. Even without cultivation. Pacha. Ripened. Oshadaya. The plants. Girya. The mountains. Abibran. Carried. Ut. Above the ground. Manin. Jewels. Translation. Rivers flowed with various kinds of tasty liquids. Trees exuded honey, edible plants came to maturity without cultivation, and hills gave forth jewels formerly hidden in their interiors. 27. Krishne bhikshita etani sarvani kurunandana niravairanya bhavans tata kuraranyapi nisargataha. O Parikshit, beloved of the Kuru dynasty, upon this ceremonial bathing of Lord Krishna, all living creatures, even those cruel by nature, became entirely freed from enmity. Purport. Those corrupted by a type of sophisticated cynicism may mock these descriptions of a paradisical world situated, affected simply by worshiping the Supreme Lord. World situation affected simply by worshiping the Supreme Lord. Unfortunately, modern man has created a hell on earth in his cynical rejection of heaven on earth, which is actually possible through Krishna consciousness. The situation described here, created simply by the auspicious bathing ceremony of the Lord, is an authentic historical incident. Since history repeats itself, there is hope that the Krishna consciousness movement may again bring the world community to the brilliant reality of self-realized existence. Text 28, the last verse. After he had ceremoniously bathed Lord Govinda, who was the master of the cows in the cowherd community, King Indra took the Lord's permission and, surrounded by the demigods and other higher beings, returned to his heavenly abode. Thus end the purports of the humble servants whose divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 27th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Indra and Mother Sarabhi Offer Prayers. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutundeve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shinivadi Paskya Dhyade Siddharane. Paradise is described here, and the general tendency is to think that paradise is something mythological, or something that a few religious fanatics are interested in some far-off world that no one really knows anything about. But actually, Krishna consciousness is directly achievable by every human being, especially if they learn the art of devotional service. We have two aspects of our personality in the material world, because we have a subtle body, which is composed of an intelligence and a mind. And the mind basically wants happiness. The soul wants happiness and is trying to find happiness through the mind, through satisfying the mind. And in order to figure out how to satisfy the mind, we use our intelligence. In the material concept of life, one's intelligence is directed towards serving the mind and the senses. In other words, the mind has some idea that if you satisfy its desires, and the mind's desires can be divided into two different types of desires. One is security, the negative side, and the other is positive comfort, we could say. People in the material world are generally motivated to use their intelligence either to seek out security or to find comfort. And therefore, somehow or another, they've gotten the idea by miseducation. Security and comfort will be obtained if we simply make money. Because with money, we can buy security, and with money, we can buy comfort. Unfortunately, because it's a false conception that you can buy something like security and comfort, because this body, no matter how much is protected, will never feel completely secure. Krishna's Shukadeva Goswami says, Deha patya kalatradishu atma sanyeshva satsupi tesham pramato nidanam pashanapi napashyati. Deha, the body. Deha patya, apatya, things like relationships to the body, kala, tra, the wife, and adishu. So when there's children, there's a house, and there's a wife, then there'll be so many things also to protect us. Atma sanyeshva satsupi. Because basically we want ourselves to be comfortable and feel secure. But because we're basing it on basically dukkhalayam ashasvatam, this body, which is going to die, and even if it doesn't die today, every moment it's growing older, and it's always facing some kind of discomfort. So to try to seek security in a body that's destined to die in a very short period of time is actually a ludicrous affair. And to try to find peace, because Krishna says, unless there is peace, how can there be any happiness? To try and find a peace in a world which is, especially in Kali Yuga, functioning so whimsically, the economic system, the social system, the governing system, everything is more or less based upon people's whimsical, fulfilling their own personal whimsical desires, and therefore everything is quite arbitrary. It seems to be quite arbitrary, but actually it's quite well planned out to satisfy the whims of a few people and to convince everyone else that they should work hard to satisfy the whims, their own whims and some whims of other people, at the expense of the vast majority of people. So this type of basing one's happiness on such a whimsical basis is doomed to failure. Nitevidu swarthikitim hi Vishnu. They're not educated that if we want security, it has to be on a different platform. If we want happiness, it has to be on a different platform. Although one may work in this world to get relatively peace as far as it goes and relative comfort as far as it can possibly go, but actually the more one works harder and harder for security and peace, the less one will find himself with security and peace. If I work hard to get a big house, then the result is I have another thing to protect. Not only I have to protect myself in the house, but now I have to protect the house. So my energy, instead of actually going towards protecting my real self, now is diverted to a house or a car or this or that. And therefore, I have no time even to think about how to make myself peaceful and happy and comfortable or protected. And at the end of the life, even if I very nicely protected my house, it may still be there when I leave my body, but I don't know where I'm going. Prabhupada was walking by one beautiful house in Switzerland. The lawn was immaculate. The tree, every branch, every leaf was in its proper place. And Prabhupada said, this is very unfortunate. Because this poor man, he's spending so much time making a perfect house. That means that in his next lifetime, he'll come back in the house. But maybe not as a human being. If he was not pious, he may come back as a tree with perfect leaves, all nicely pointing in the same direction. Therefore, one has to get intelligence, but of a different nature, in order to understand what is our actual benefit and how to create for ourselves, at least, a situation where we can become, actually feel ourselves secure, fearless. Without fearlessness, how can one feel secure? One has to become fearless, but on a basis of reality, where there's no reason to fear. Only when we realize that we're spiritual beings, well, we have no reason to fear. If I think I'm this body, then I have every reason to be fearful. And if I'm not fearful, that means I'm foolish. Even if someone says, I have no fear, well, we watch them when they cross the street, they're looking both ways. Therefore, this idea that even Prabhupada, we read the other day in Burjan Prabhu's book, Prabhupada, when he crossed the street, even if it was on a red light, he'd look both ways. It's foolish to say, I'm not fearful. This body is just temporary. If you have something very delicate, like a saucer made of china, and you say, I don't worry, just throw it up in the air and you don't even bother to look where it lands. Obviously, that type of fearlessness will just break the china piece of china. It has some value, and if you know what the value is, then you'll utilize it properly and you'll protect it properly. So not that we neglect the body, we should be concerned about it to the extent that it will help us achieve real freedom from all misery and all misunderstanding. Without getting a proper understanding, then we can't really get free from our miseries. Therefore, in the beginning, Krishna consciousness is meant to use our intelligence so that we can understand at least the background and the material nature properly. We can understand how we become entangled in our misconceptions of identifying ourselves with the gross and subtle material bodies. Even if we can't free ourselves immediately, at least we should have some knowledge about how we become entangled, so that as we watch ourselves sometimes get entangled, at least we can appreciate that this is something I should try to avoid in the future. On the other hand, in the beginning, generally the devotees come and they take Krishna consciousness as kind of a method of freeing themselves from misery. Because that's normal. No one wants to be miserable. And therefore, after one becomes free from misery to some extent, then one wants to be comfortable. Actually, comfort is just another phase of being less miserable. It's just another stage. And even so, these two stages of performing our work, either to become free from distress, keep ourselves above the water of material misery. Generally, people chant Hare Krishna at the beginning especially, because it elevates us at least a fraction above the ocean of material misery. So one fraction above the ocean of material misery means that comparatively there's no misery. There's an anxiety of falling back into the ocean, because one is quite close to the ocean, but at least one is not in the ocean of material misery. So by following the principles, by chanting Hare Krishna, and by performing some other service also, then we gradually get some strength to get above the ocean of material miseries. Especially, we get some spiritual strength so we can avoid the cause of material misery, namely illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, gambling, etc. And then there is some hint, if along the way, that if we keep on doing that, then we'll get more and more intelligence, and therefore we'll know how to relate to people in a better way. We'll know how to present things in such a way as that all the things that we're desiring will gradually be given to us, either through our relationship with Krishna or through relationship to others. But one has to go beyond that to understand things with transcendental discrimination, transcendental intelligence, and expertise. If we actually want to not only just do things as a ritual, service to Krishna, this is what Krishna wants me to do, I do it, I also have to develop transcendental discrimination and expertise. Transcendental discrimination begins with understanding how everyone is Krishna's eternal servant. And that presently we're in a body being influenced both for devotees who are not completely on the spiritual platform. They're being influenced both by the influence of the modes of nature as well as the influence of the higher authorities coming through disciples' succession, their instructions. So both influences are there, and therefore we can see the devotees that when they're in the temple, they're comparatively like angels, and then on the outside, sometimes the halo kind of drops down a little bit. So it's a fight, how to keep the halo up and the two horns down. But at least there's a struggle, and if one becomes more transcendently discriminative, then one is able to remember that everyone is actually Krishna's servant, and some of Krishna's servants are actually serving Krishna, some of them are trying to learn how to serve Krishna, some of them are unconscious about service to Krishna, and some are actually opposing service to Krishna. So how to deal with these different persons requires some discrimination. And how to deal with them in such a way is to, we ourselves can make progress and encourages others to make progress, that requires some transcendental expertise. But ultimately the goal is to develop love for Krishna. That in Kali Yuga, many people have great discriminative powers. They can analyze everyone's fault down to the most minute degree. They know exactly what everyone is doing wrong. And they're expert at manipulating everyone to get exactly what they want for their own sense gratification. But this type of expertise and discrimination will not help us on the come to the transcendental platform. Transcendental discrimination means ultimately to become expert at helping others to become Krishna conscious, especially ourselves, which is to develop appreciation for Krishna and appreciation for the Krishna's pure devotees so that we can learn from them and we can learn from those who are following Krishna's pure devotees how to actually become a sincere servant of Krishna without material conceptions and motivations. So simultaneously how to appreciate however people are serving Krishna and trying to dedicate their energies to Krishna's service with understanding and help them, assist them and try to increase that transcendental understanding and transcendental desire to serve Krishna without motivation and without misconceptions. At the same time, even there is some fault, because in the age of Kali it's an ocean of faults, to properly deal with the faults so that one does not become oneself entangled in trying to change people's faults, because Krishna will do that in one sense. If one gets the positive, then one automatically, the negative will go away. Or sometimes if one is trying for the positive and the negative is holding one back, generally speaking, one will, if one appreciates someone who's on a higher platform, then one may inquire submissively how to take away the negative to come to a higher platform. If one is demanding of someone that they surrender, then without understanding whether one is really willing to listen to surrender, even Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says to Arjuna, you've asked me, I've explained Bhagavad Gita. I didn't force you to hear Bhagavad Gita. You asked me to tell you. Although I'm God, I didn't force you. Now I've explained it. I've answered your question. Yatechasitatakaru. That even God doesn't demand that we listen to him. And even God, after we listen to him, doesn't demand that we follow him. But Arjuna says, nashto moha smritira labdva, or Krishna asks him, kachire tashtutam partha tvaya kagrena chetasa kachiragana samoha pranatas te dhananjaya. Now I've explained to everything. Now I have a question for you. Have you been bothering to listen with attention to what I've been saying? Did you actually appreciate what I've been saying? And if you have, let's see what the test is. Not that you shake your head and say, yes, 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 no worries. But let's see. Has your illusion been dispelled and you are now prepared? And is your... Let's see. Kachit etashutam partha tvaya kagrena chetasa. Kachit agana. Is your ignorance, kachit agana samoha, and your complete illusion, has it now gone away? Have you understood everything clearly now, after I've spoken? So Arjuna says, nashto moha smritira labdva. Yes, my nashto moha, my illusion has now been dispelled. Smritira labdva. And now I've regained my memory by your mercy. Now I can remember that I'm actually a spiritual soul. And now I've understood that actually I'm not the body. And now I'm prepared because I know whatever you want me to do is good for me and good for everyone else. Now I'm prepared to act according to your direction rather than the illusory energy which caused my forgetfulness of reality and which deluded me into thinking my mission in life was to serve my mind and senses. And therefore Arjuna fought on the battlefield Kurukshetra under Krishna's directions voluntarily. Krishna didn't force him to fight. He didn't force him to follow his instructions. Similarly, there's some, we can, anyone here, we all have discrimination, and we've been trained up how to have discrimination to find everyone's fault. Even we're not conscious of it, but that's just the nature of material existence. What to speak when we're systematically trained to find everyone's weak point, because the whole material world nowadays is interested not in dharma or in liberation, they're interested in economic development for sense gratification. So economic development means you find people's weak point so you can exploit them for your sense gratification. If there's no dharma, there's no goal of liberation, then there's only going to be economic development, exploiting people to gratify your own senses, or exploiting the material resources to gratify one's senses. So that's the training systematically in the material world. And the more one is educated, the more one has that tendency. We may say otherwise, we may pretend otherwise, but without Krishna consciousness, without a clear understanding of reality, then we'll be forced to act according to our imperfect understanding of things under the spell of illusory energy. So therefore, Krishna consciousness means we have to develop transcendental understanding, spiritual understanding, as found in Bhagavad Gita. As soon as we have the vision of the Bhagavad Gita, where we see everyone as Krishna's servants struggling against illusion or struggling to become devotees, or on the spiritual platform, or envious of Krishna, and then reciprocate with them in such a way as that we ourselves become an instrument of Krishna in his hands to encourage the devotees to serve the higher authorities, our acharyas, to help the innocent become devotees, and to not avoid those who are categorically against Krishna, not to associate with them, not to encourage them in their misbehavior, but rather neglect them. Then with such transcendental discrimination, then we can get intelligence coming from Krishna, how to perform that service to our acharyas, and therefore do something the best we can to actually make the world Krishna conscious. And the more Krishna is here, then the more the transcendental energy will be here, and it'll be way beyond our expectations of what actually spiritual energy is like, what the spiritual existence is like. We can't compare it with anything material. It can only be experienced the more we become transcendently aware and work with transcendental expertise to fulfill the mission of our acharyas, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and help everyone awaken their Krishna consciousness to the best of our ability. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes. You don't have to.
Does that mean it's the perception of the devotee when he's Krishna conscious that everything, because we've heard Prabhupada say that you can be in Vrindavan here, is it a perception, or does the physical world actually change? And if it is just a perception, is that a result of giving up our fault-finding mentality?
No, everything is based upon our perception. What we're doing is based on our perception, experience. If enough people become Krishna conscious, then cow slaughtering will stop. There'll be intoxication will greatly diminish. All these sinful activities will greatly diminish because people will be satisfied. They'll actually feel transcendental pleasure. They won't have to find pleasure in sinful activity. So that will, but in order to accomplish that, we have to become aware that there is spiritual energy. We can offer theoretically to people that there's a spiritual level of experience, but we won't be so convinced about it or so determined to do that unless we're actually experiencing that spiritual level of existence. But most of it, for us at the beginning, is more not just perception, it's understanding how to reach the perception. It's gaining the intelligence and then actually utilizing that intelligence and then seeing the happy results, so we become more encouraged to get even more intelligence, spiritual intelligence. And when we do that, then we'll be able to tell people by our experience how to come to that platform too, that they can do it. They want to. It's available for everyone. The literature is not just meant for a small group of people. It's meant for any, it's open for everyone, whoever would like to take advantage of it. And we can realize that, then we can appropriately explain that to people so that we can see what step they're on, what their next step is. Then we can explain what the next step is. We can tell them about the happy goal also. Becoming aware of Krishna again. Yes.
Hare Krishna. I know that there's a part of the philosophy that is inconceivable, so maybe there's no way to answer this. And I've heard that the living entity only knows 70% of what he's able to know. But I was trying to talk to my dad about Krishna consciousness one day, and he said, well, why does Krishna get the spot of being the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You know, who picked him? And, you know, why? What came before God? And how is it that, you know, that there's this being that is the Alpha and the Omega and beginningless? And are we just supposed to understand that there are just things that we'll never understand?
No, Krishna just happens to be God. He's always God.
I know.
So what's the difficulty? Just like the sun, someone says, why is one part of the sun get to be the sun and everyone else is, every other part is the sunlight? So we have to explain that? That's the way it is. It's always been like that. Only because we want to become God and we're envious of him, we start questioning like that. Why is Obama the president of the United States? Why aren't you the president?
I'm very unqualified.
Yeah, so Krishna is qualified to become God, and therefore he's God. He's always been qualified, and he always will be qualified. Now, if we become Krishna conscious, then we'll become much more qualified than we are now. But now we're envious. Krishna's not envious. But we're envious. If we serve Krishna, we surrender to him, and he surrenders to the soul also. So he's not envious. But we don't want anyone to tell us what to do, so we're envious of Krishna. But Krishna is not envious. He'll even serve us if we become an unalloyed servant of him. He's already serving us. He's giving us the universe to play around with. So if you don't like it, then stay in the material world and forget about Krishna. But that's the way things are. If you can't accept it, that's nothing no one even could do about it. Just like we're not the President of the United States, you may sit around and lament, why am I not the President of the United States? But you're just wasting your time. There is a president. It's just it happens it's not you. And it's very unlikely you'll ever become the president. So there is a God, it just so happens it's not us.
Can I ask one more little question, or I can come back?
Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm sure you've heard of the golden rule. Do unto others as you would want them to do unto you. So I was thinking about this one day, and how you just mentioned how if we become surrendered, fully surrendered, Krishna will actually serve us.
He is already serving us.
Like,
on the spiritual platform.
On the spiritual platform, yeah. Like, personally. Like,
he's already personally serving us. We just, ananyas chintayanto mam, ye jana paripasate, te sham niti biyuktanam, yoga shemam vahamyaham. To those who are constantly meditating upon, engage my service, meditating upon me, I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So to some degree of our surrender, Krishna is already helping us. Otherwise, how do we get a material body? It's not our body. It was given to us. How do we gain this intelligence to serve Krishna? It's all being given to us. It's not ours. It's a gift from Krishna.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Besides that, in the modern age, the golden rule, people think, is not if you do unto others as they do unto you. It's he who has gold, they rule. That's the golden rule. Anyhow, it's not a very good rule. Anyone else have a question? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. What came to my mind is like we read about the spiritual world and we read about the experiences and the paradise as being said. And then we are in this world and we are trying to be devotees. But what happens is there's a like contradictory, like, but we are trying to practice spiritual life in this material world, and the principles which we practice in the spiritual life, they are opposite. Like, you be humble, and in this world, like, when you go out, it's all you have to fight for everything. Like, you have to, sometimes you are manipulated or you manipulate and things like that. So, as they say, like, be in this world but not of this world. So, like, what does it mean on?
We have to do our activities with knowledge that everything belongs to Krishna. Then we'll stop contemplating the objects for our sense gratification of this world. We have to develop a service attitude and a spiritual vision that everything here is Krishna's energies, and whatever influence I have should be utilized to serve Krishna with it. And therefore we won't look at the objects of this world for my pleasure, I'll look at them as potential energies to use in Krishna's service. Then we won't become bewildered by others' influence. We won't forget that we're actually the most insignificant servant to Krishna. Anything else? One more question. Okay.
I find it really hard to think myself insignificant when I hear all the time the glories, how glorious it is to be a devotee of Krishna.
Yeah, so let's become a devotee and then we can find out how glorious it is. Now we're aspiring to become devotees.
Oh, that's
right. If we were a devotee, we would never fall into Maya. But right now we're aspiring to become devotees. And when we become devotees and we realize how wonderful Krishna and his devotees are, then we'll feel ourselves actually insignificant. But now because we think we're this body, or we may think we're devotees, but question is, what are we really devoted to? How much am I full of anxiety to please Krishna at every moment? And how much am I divided my attention to pleasing Krishna sometimes and pleasing my senses other times? So first let us become devotees, and then we'll understand what real humility is. As a real devotee who's actually in love with Krishna and Krishna's devotees, then they'll actually appreciate how wonderful everyone is, how wonderful they are. And therefore, in comparison, one takes oneself so seriously. Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.